Welcome to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Bringing you enlightened discussions with authors, creatives, innovative business, and health professionals, and ordinary people living extraordinary lives. Sharing their expertise and life stories. Making a difference, one word at a time. Now here's your host, Vicki St. Clair.
Welcome, everybody. Welcome, welcome. Well, what happens when an artist and writer who's married to herself, by the way, married to herself, meets a psychologist who spent 30 years of his life helping couples lead happier lives? Well, you might guess that she met the love of her life. They fell in love. And as they blended their lives together, they also blended their philosophies on love and relationships, resulting in a colorful book called Succulent Wild Love, Six Powerful Habits for Feeling More Love More Often. And we'll be talking with Sark, Bedden, or her given name is Susan Ariel Rainbow Kennedy, but she goes by Sark, in the second half of today's show. First, I'm very pleased to be joined by Dan Millman. If his name's familiar to you, it's not surprising because he's written about 17 books, I believe. Probably one of his better known books is the Way of the Peaceful Warrior, which was made into a movie too, starring Nick Nolte. Today we'll be talking about insights from another of his books, and this has just come out in paperback. It's called The Four Purposes of Life: Finding Meaning and Direction in a Changing World. Dan teaches worldwide, speaking to people from all walks of life, including leaders in the fields of health, psychology, education, business, sports, and arts. Dan Millman, welcome.
Well, thank you, Vicki. You know, when you did that initial introduction of Sark, whom I love, by the way, I thought that was I was going to be introduced in a rather creative way. So, glad to be here with you.
Well, we were just chatting before we came live, and you're heading off to London and Switzerland tomorrow to talk on this very subject, right?
Yes. I am, and other related topics.
And so I asked you how it's received differently in Europe, or if it's received differently in Europe, because, you know, I think Americans got into self-help and purpose-driven living maybe en masse before parts of Europe. And you're finding that people are very responsive everywhere, right?
They are, because normally I draw people interested in my work anyway. It reminds me of a wonderful story, maybe apropos, maybe not, but Abe Lincoln, the President Abraham Lincoln, was once asked to endorse a product by a friend, but he wasn't really comfortable endorsing a product. So he said, this is the sort of thing perfect for those who enjoy this sort of thing. And the reason that is a relevant note is because every author, you know, there's one light but many lamps, and every author and speaker conveys their approach, their finger pointing at the moon in a slightly different way. So it's wonderful that each of us can attract people who seem to resonate, in a sense, with the way we express that message.
Well, you begin this book, The Four Purposes of Life, by talking about a fellow that you named Socrates, who told you to stop seeking future happiness and to practice unreasonable happiness in each moment. So what did that mean to you when he told you that, and how did it change your life?
Well, I was busy being reasonable. Everything had to be reasonable. Michael Crichton once said the difference between fiction and life is that fiction has to make sense. But I expected life to make sense. And when Socrates gave me that advice, it sounds a bit idealistic to be unreasonably happy. But he pointed out that there are many reasons to be unhappy. All one has to do is pick up a newspaper and read about the latest whatever. And there aren't that many mental reasons to feel happy. So that's why he said happiness was a practice. It was something we did, something we brought to other people, brought into the world, not just a feeling, a gleeful feeling we happen to feel in one moment or another, because all feelings pass like the weather. And nobody's happy all the time, but there's this underlying sense of fulfillment and satisfaction when we get things done, when we function in life. And The Four Purposes of Life, my newest book, is designed to help people do that, to get a sense of clarity, kind of a map to everyday life.
And so let's talk a little bit about the book. Some of this you refer back to previous teachings. Now, I didn't see the Peaceful Warrior movie. I didn't actually read the book either. But you've incorporated some of your teachings as well as with a great deal of new material. Have some of your older teachings changed? Have they deepened?
I would say deepened over time, certainly. I'm gratified to look back at my old books, and I do read them on occasion to review. It's a good idea for any author. And I'm happy to say I wouldn't reject or deny or change what I'd written, though over time one does learn. And, in Way of the Peaceful Warrior, there's the famous Zen story. Socrates used a car's radiator instead of a cup, but the old Zen story about someone explaining all the things they knew and they wanted to learn about Zen, and the teacher poured him tea and kept pouring, and the cup was overflowing. And he said, "Stop, it's overflowing, it won't hold anymore." And the teacher said, "And your mind is like this cup. In order to learn, you have to first empty your cup." Well, you know, that's not altogether true. I think you don't have to empty your cup, you just have to get a bigger cup. And so in my own life experience, as I point out in the first purpose of the book, my life experience has expanded and deepened what I teach and helped me to bring more clarity. In fact, I wrote a book 25 years after my best-known book, Way of the Peaceful Warrior, called Wisdom of the Peaceful Warrior, and it highlights 100 teaching points from the first book, things that Socrates taught me, but looking at them from a viewpoint 25 years later. So I was able to clarify and elucidate those points, which are easy to be misunderstood. So in The Four Purposes of Life, here's the irony or the paradox. Even though I wrote it almost 30 years after Way of the Peaceful Warrior, it's actually an ideal book to read about the same time because it's also an introduction and it puts all the pieces of the puzzle together so people can understand the context of my work. So it's not just a rehash by any means
of
things I've written before. It's a way to put them together that in a way that does make much more sense.
Right. Well, you say, and this is so true, that many people never find, they search their whole life for their life purpose and don't find it. You know, others say finding your purpose is your purpose in life. How did you come up with the four purposes?
Well, a friend of mine, Vicki, said, "Dan, I don't need to read your book. I know the purpose of life. Everyone does. It's learning to love. You know, whatever the question, love is the answer." And that sounded great to me. That certainly could be a purpose in life, the purpose. Another friend said, "Well, isn't it about awakening or enlightenment? Isn't that the human journey of consciousness?" That sounded good, too. But just as we can divide the points on a compass into four primary directions, or the days of the year into four seasons, by looking at our lives through these particular four purposes that I outline in the book and go into in some depth, even though it's a small book, I believe it helps shine a light on our life experience and helps us to understand and appreciate the challenges even of the everyday life and what we're here to do. It wasn't enough. I couldn't have just taken any one of these purposes and said, "This is it." So, and just to do one purpose, because these four complement one another. And once we go into them, I think your listeners will kind of get why I have these four.
Right, right. So let's dive into them. Purpose number one is learning life's lessons and centers around the premise that Earth is our school, daily life is our classroom. We're never ending students, basically. So talk to us a little about that, Dan.
Well, on the face of it, it sounds pretty mundane and even, boring. People are thinking of school. They were happy they graduated. They're out of school. It sounds academic, but it's nothing like that. It's a recognition that our lessons never end. I remind people, if you take yoga, the teacher reminds you to keep breathing through the movements, but class isn't over when you roll up your mat and walk out the door. Yoga goes on forever. So in the same sense, our formal schooling has a purpose, but we never stop learning. And yes, we all know we learn from our life experience, but I'm saying something more radical. I'm saying that it's impossible to fail at anything in life as long as we've learned from it. Because learning isn't just the icing on the cake, it is the substance of it. That is what our first purpose, something we all share. And most of us have noticed that lessons repeat themselves until we learn them. And we've also maybe noticed that if we don't learn easy lessons, they get a bit more dramatic. You know, life throws a ping pong ball and later a bowling ball. So it's wise to learn these lessons early on and learn them more gracefully. And that's the whole point. So no one needs to read my books or anyone else's books or attend my seminars or any seminars in order to continue to evolve as a human being, because daily life will guarantee to teach us everything we need in order to evolve. And someone might say, well, Dan, then why do you write books? Why do you teach seminars? Because any good reminder or perspective can help us to learn the lessons of daily life much more clearly and stabilize them so we can actually make use of them and change our action.
Right, right. I love, Stephen Covey called it third-person teaching, when you learn something and then you're sharing it with others. And I think it also helps deepen our own understanding.
Oh, I would agree. You know, they also say that you teach, whatever you teach is what you most need to learn. Mm-hmm. I must have needed to learn a lot with 16 books and counting.
I think that about doing the radio show, because I constantly learn, let me tell you. I've read hundreds of books now.
Right.
So while we're still talking about learning and life's lessons as being our number one purpose, what have you learned? What do you know now that you wish you'd known 20 years ago? Big question there.
Yes, it's a good question, relevant, and I'd like to share that, because I'm going to tell you very briefly about a recurring dream I've had, and I'm sharing it because I believe many of your listeners have also had this dream, if not all of them, whether or not they remember it. You might recognize it. I have an important exam. I realize I'm making my way to it in this dream, but then I realize, even though I signed up for the course months ago, I forgot to attend any of the classes. And that's kind of a common anxiety dream. And the irony or the point of this dream is that is exactly a description of most of our daily lives. We get tests all the time in relationships, in money, in health, in physical wellness, and so on. These lessons keep popping up, but we don't know what courses we'd signed up for. If only I had known that, it would have been a huge help, which is why I shared the 12 courses in that first section. All of us are enrolled in. They're required courses we need to pass in order to graduate, and it helps us to understand what we're doing in everyday life, what it's for, why are there challenges in all these different areas. And just to give a flavor, obviously we're not going to go through the 12, but the first one is just discovering our innate worth as human beings, helping us get out of our own way and avoid self-sabotage. The second one involves turning what we know into what we actually do. It's about reclaiming our will. It's an issue for many of us. The third one is energizing our body. So you can see that foundation, the first three. And then we go on to 12 other areas of life that are the courses we're all enrolled in.
Right, right. Well, we've got three more purposes to cover here. We're talking with Dan Millman. His book is The Four Purposes of Life, Finding Meaning and Direction in a Changing World. And boy, is it changing. We will be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair.
Give me a sense of purpose, a real sense of purpose now. Give me a sense of purpose, a real sense of purpose now.
Parkinson's disease affects as many as 1 million people in the United States. At the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, it's our mission to beat this disease. To learn about the Parkinson's Disease Foundation, or if you want to help support our work, visit our website, pdf.org, or call us at 800-457-6676. In the Northwest, contact the Northwest Parkinson's Foundation at nwpf.org.
All right, everybody in the car, let's go.
What are we going to do first when we get there, Mom? Go for a hike?
Sure.
What about canoeing? Can we go canoeing too?
I don't see why.
How long does it take to get to the forest?
It's not that far, sweetie.
Are we there yet?
Yep, we're here.
Already?
It's a short drive from your neighborhood to your naturehood. Visit discovertheforest.org to find a neighborhood park or green space near you. Brought to you by the Ad Council and the U.S. Forest Service.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Join us live every Monday at noon on Alternative Talk 1150 or stream live from conversationslive.net.
There's nothing else like it on the dial. Alternative Talk 1150 AM.
Give me a sense of purpose, a real sense of purpose now.
And welcome back, everyone. And we're talking about purpose. Eric always manages to find music that's appropriate somehow. We're talking with Dan Millman. He speaks and teaches all over the world. He's authored 17 books. We're talking today about the four purposes of life, finding meaning and direction in a changing world. And we just looked at purpose number one, which is life's lessons and learning in the real world. So let's look at number two, and that focuses around career and calling. Now, a lot of people, and myself included, years ago when I first got into all of this kind of stuff, thought, you know, that my calling had to be my work, and my work had to be my calling. So let's differentiate from your perspective on what you mean by this.
Sure. This is an area most people think of as their life purpose when they say, what am I here to do? They think of, how will I spend most of the hours of my day? And I think it helps people tremendously to, first of all, when we're told advice like, do what you love and the money will follow, well, the fact is sometimes it follows and often it doesn't.
Right.
Because doing what we love is pursuing our calling, whether it's a hobby, a sport, playing a musical instrument, something that we are drawn to. We can't always explain why, but we just like it a lot. For me, it was jumping up and down on a trampoline many years ago, which led to much else. But that's fine to pursue our calling and do what we love. But at the same time, many starving artists would do better also having a day job to stabilize their life so they could move out of their parents' basement and have a nutritious food and a place to live and so on. And then they could, in their discretionary time, pursue their calling. And in the same way, many people only justify using their time if it produces an income, and they may have abandoned a calling, something they loved when they were younger, that would have enriched their life. So it's important to understand the difference. Our career is about earning an income. It's a very basic human skill and need to support ourselves and our family and to achieve independence. So even if we like other things about our job, if we weren't getting paid for it, we'd need to find something else. So once we understand these two things, we're not so idealistic. For example, we don't have to love our work, but I believe there are three criteria, a trinity of needs. If we make what feels like good money, fair money to us, while doing the second thing, doing what we enjoy and find suitable and meaningful, and the third is something that serves other people, that helps us connect with other people in a form of service, that, whatever that shape that may be, is an appropriate way to produce a living. And self-knowledge is really a key in this area, because if we don't know ourselves, and it takes time to do that, even after college, if we don't know ourselves, we end up making the right choice for the wrong person, the one we thought we were. And as you probably, I'm sure you appreciate, Vicky, many people have trouble differentiating what they really want to do and what they think they should do or someone else wants them to do.
Absolutely.
And that takes time and maturity. You know, that's why they call them the trying 20s, because in our 20s, we tend to try this and try that and try that.
And that's, I think that's what life should be about, personally, when you're that age. You know, it should be about exploring. And I'm in my third career, and it's been evolving over the past 15 years plus. It evolves every day. So, I don't think we need to lock ourselves in at all. You say at a crossroads, there are three qualities that intersect. We'll find a signpost pointing to work that we're most likely to find fulfilling. And those can be expressed by, what are my talents, interests, and values?
Well, when I talk about self-knowledge, that is one way to define it. Rather than keep it vague, you know thyself, if we do know our interests, what we're truly interested in and what we're not interested in, and that takes time, if we know what our talents are and what they're not, that's just as useful. rather than sort of being good at everything. And the third is if we understand our values, what's important to us, what feels worthwhile, those things can really help guide us in terms of that form of self-knowledge toward making wiser decisions for ourselves, not only in work, but also in relationships and other areas.
Yeah. And I think sometimes it's wise to keep your calling and your work separate. I know people who've, you know, followed their passion and when they're making a living doing it, do not enjoy it anymore.
Yeah, that's a good point. Now, it happens my career and calling are the same thing. It doesn't mean I love every single aspect of my work, for example, putting the luggage in the overhead compartment on the airplane and finding my seat and long in a jet lag. But every job has something about it we have to work through. So my work, my calling and career are the same. That's not necessarily better, though. It's perfectly fine to have a functional job and then pursue hobbies and so on at another time. And if somebody gets good enough at playing the guitar, for example, that they make money at it, hey, all the more power to them.
Right. Did you hear that, Eric? And so let's look at the third purpose, because I found this absolutely fascinating. You've come up with a number system based on one's date of birth. And you say if we take this little test, it's it's actually, you can work it out from the back of the book. It's also online at your website. But if we find out what our numbers are, and I want you to explain this in a moment, then that will help us determine our life test. We can use me as an example. I was a 29/11.
Mm-hmm. Yep. Well, let's just say the numbers, of course, at first don't mean much to people. But in brief, Pythagoras invented geometry, but he also had a mystery school. He was the first Westerner to ask, and you know, in the Hebrews, the Chinese, and other cultures, the Mayans, the Aztecs, they had systems of numerology. Now, I'd never been very interested in numerology. I don't use the N word very much because it seemed vague and abstract to me personally. Mm-hmm. But I was trained by a rather unusual mentor into a very accurate interpretation of using the numbers. It's a mysterious of the four purposes. This is the most mysterious because there's no way I can rationally explain how working with the numbers of your date of birth can give valid, reliable, accurate information about some of the core issues of one's life. I only know after 30 years working with this that it is uncanny. And I do invite your listeners to just drop by after this broadcast, of course, drop by peacefulwarrior.com. They'll see a link that says Life Purpose just on the left. If they click on that link, they'll go to a Life Purpose calculator. They put in their date of birth, and they will see a sample, just one paragraph, giving a sample of information about their life path. And there are 43 different life paths for people born after the year 1900. Mm-hmm. And the best way I can explain it, Vicki, is if I were to point to a tree outside, chances are not a single tree on the planet is exactly like that tree. However, I can say things about redwood trees that are different from birches or aspens or oaks. So just as we are each unique, like that tree, each of us is, we're not just a number, I can say there are patterns we fall into, and it's really helpful, I've found, to understand that pattern, not only for ourselves, but to look up our parents, our children, other people we know, significant others. It helps us have more compassion for ourselves and for other people to understand that third purpose is finding our life path, those drives, those qualities, and the hurdles and strengths we have, we may not have fully appreciated.
Right. I found it fascinating. I punched in the numbers of several people I know, and it was fascinating to me. And I'm usually quite skeptical about that kind of stuff.
Sure. You ought to be.
Yeah. So in the fourth purpose, we don't have a lot of time left here, but I want to look at the fourth purpose in your book, The Four Purposes of Life. You say thinking about something, about doing something, is not the same as doing it. There's no such thing as a future decision. Tell us what you mean by that and what that fourth purpose is all about.
Sure. And actually, yes, thinking about doing something is the same as not doing it. So many people
think about...
That's
true. You have to think on that a second, but it's true.
You do. And no future decision. We think we make decisions in our heads, but we don't really make a decision until we act. Then we know what decision we've made. Someone once said it beautifully. They said, how do I know what I think or feel until I see what I do? And so there's an emphasis on what I teach in general about doing, that that is going to shape our lives over time, effort over time. That's the horse I'm betting on. The fourth purpose brings it back down to earth right in front of us, because we may not know our cosmic purpose if someone asked us, but we always know our purpose right now. So it's not just about living in the present. We've all heard that's good to do, but it shows that that section really says more about how to do that. And it's not just living in the present. It's what is my purpose in this moment? Our purpose is having a conversation, right? And your listeners, their purpose is listening right now, unless they're multitasking. But I say more about that in the book. So it really may be the most important purpose of all. It's one we can get our just embrace and get a handle on, is what is my purpose in this moment? Life is a series of moments. The presence we bring to each moment is the presence we bring to our life.
Right. And you say the fourth purpose is what brings the others, it allows us to integrate the others. Should we, do you recommend that readers work through the book in sequence?
You know, that's why I wrote it in that sequence. It's not a rigid rule. Some people like to read things backwards, which is just fine. But I would say it can be read in any order. But one is the broad one. Learning life's lessons, the big one, and then the career and calling, the life path, and then it kind of ends on a very positive, focused note about attending to our purpose in this moment.
Well, Dan Millman, a pleasure talking with you today, and the book is called The Four Purposes of Life, Finding Meaning and Direction in a Changing World. A quick final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with before you jet off to London.
Well, we tend to second-guess ourselves and think what we should have or could have or would have done. I think it's very important to understand that wherever we step, the path appears beneath our feet. We cannot lose our way, even though occasionally it feels like that. It's all part of the process of our life.
Love it. Thank you. Thank you, Dan, so much. Appreciate it.
My pleasure, Vicki.
You can find out more about Dan and his work at peacefulwarrior.com, peacefulwarrior.com. And this book we've talked about today is out in paperback now. It's called The Four Purposes of Life. Please do stay with us. We'll be right back. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair.
Let's see if I guess that this just isn't working.
Knowing you have a great idea for a book is one thing, writing it another. So what's stopping you? Maybe you can't find time. Maybe you don't know where to begin. Maybe you wrote a couple of chapters, then disappeared down a rabbit hole. Or maybe you'd rather someone else write it for you. Partnering with the right coach or ghostwriter can make all the difference between talking about your book and finishing your book. As an award-winning writer and strategic consultant, Vicki St. Clair's storytelling credits span from business, health, self-help, and memoir to New York Times and USA Today best-selling anthologies. Vicki partners with people just like you, at the exact level you need, whether you need a little encouragement, editorial guidance, or full-blown ghostwriting and consulting services. If you're serious about telling the story you know is inside you, stop procrastinating. Let's get your story down on paper. Contact Vicki today. Email Vicki at VickiSt.Clair.com or call 1-800-495-7617. See more about Vicki and her work at VickiSt.Clair.com.
Oh, yeah, that could work.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicki St. Clair, Seattle native and Edgar Award nominee Glenn Eric Hamilton joins us to talk about his latest novel, Hard Cold Winter. And neuroscientist Dr. Majori Walcott searches for the meaning of human consciousness in infinite awareness, the awakening of a scientific mind. Tune in every Monday at noon Pacific time right here on Alternative Talk 1150 and catch up with podcasts at conversationslive.net.
It only takes a minute to find out if you may have prediabetes, and you can do it at doihaveprediabetes.org. But you're probably not going to, are you? Kids, work, listening to the radio. You're busy, which is great because busy people can't get prediabetes. Oh my, I read that wrong. They can.
Should have worn my glasses.
So visit doihaveprediabetes.org and take a short test, because prediabetes can be reversed.
Brought to you by the Ad Council and its Prediabetes Awareness Partners.
On the Launchpad Show this week, Bob Trask, the author of Romancing the Soul and the founder of ARAS Foundation, shares his experiences and insights building integrity through the Trask Triangle. Chef Dina shares a key ingredient that will give your life a boost. We'll have the latest installment of Delisle's Life Lessons. Jimmy Baca will inspire us with the quote of the week. And R. Hill introduces upcoming events that are on the horizon. Tune in every Wednesday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time, right here on Alternative Talk 1150, as the Launchpad has a blast propelling innovative ideas into a world of possibility. Catch up with the producers at thelaunchpad.club.
You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Talk radio to inspire, inform, and stimulate. Making a difference, one word at a time.
Independent programs, independent voices, independent ideas. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. And we are now joined by a friend of Dan Millman. I just found out they both know each other, coincidentally. We're talking in this next section about a new philosophy of love and relationships for everyone. The book is called Succulent Wild Love. Don't you love that title, Succulent Wild Love? Yes, Eric's raising his eyebrows. And it provides six powerful habits for feeling more love, more often. And it's written by life partners Sark and Dr. John Waddell. And let me tell you a little bit about both of them. Sark is also known as Susan Ariel Rainbow Kennedy. And Dr. John Waddell are the authors, as I said. Sark is a best-selling author and artist with 16 titles in print and well over 2 million books sold. And Dr. John has been helping individuals and couples lead happier lives for over 30 years through his clinical psychology practice and metaphysical teachings. And you can find them at planetsark.com. Sark, welcome.
Oh, thank you so much, Vicky.
Well, I just, personal curiosity here, why you go by Sark and not Susan Ariel Rainbow Kennedy. And Sark is in caps for those who are curious.
Yes, Sark is in all caps. Well, yeah, you know, I've been using Sark since 1982, since it was delivered to me as my artist and writer name, and I really appreciate the androgyny of it, and obviously four names is a lot for people.
Yes, yes.
So Sark is just quick and easy and very familiar to a lot of people.
So you have quite a love story with Dr. John Waddell. I'm not sure if he's your fiancé or husband, but you met in 2012. You had married yourself, I read. You go along on this cruise, which has a metaphysical conference going on. Tell us how you guys met.
Yeah, I married myself and wrote about it in 1997 in a book called Succulent Wild Woman. And that was my statement of self-liberation. And now Succulent Wild Love is really my statement of relationship liberation. On that cruise ship, yes, the metaphysical cruise, and I met John, and very quickly we established a tremendous bond. He told me that he had been married to the most wonderful woman, and the honeymoon never ended. And the only reason it did was because she died. And he said, I want you to know that I'm qualified to adore you.
Well, who could fail to fall in love at that?
Well, and then he said something even more that meant maybe even more to me, which was he said, I want you to know that you're obviously a very creative and beautiful and talented woman. He said, but I want you to know that what I appreciate most about you is that I know that you're normal. And he said, what I mean by that is you're a woman who wants to give and receive love. And I started to cry because I was trying to hide by being normal, because I thought if anyone knew, they could get really close to me and then they could hurt me. And he was falling in love with the Susan of Sark. He had never heard of Sark. He didn't know anything that I did. And I felt very safe with him right away. And it turned out to be a very good thing, because he's a remarkable person.
Mm. So you obviously like this word succulent, as do I, because you've used it in a couple of book titles. But tell me what it means to you, Sark.
It means a succulent plant is a plant that nourishes itself. It feeds itself food and water from the environment, and in that way is self-sustaining. So I wanted a relationship that would encompass my, I was tremendously self-loving. I had learned how to really love myself and was practicing that. And so I wanted the best of being loving with myself and the best of a relationship with another person. So that's how succulent came to be in my life. And then, of course, wild is untamed and being who I am and not merging and becoming some facsimile of myself with another person.
Right. I think this is an issue that many people who've been single a long time and are comfortable being single and comfortable in their skin and have worked to get there. Usually they've worked to get there. But I think then, you know, coming into a relationship or being open to a new relationship can present a lot of problems. And you talk a lot about this in the book. You both shared your personal journeys along the way. Your whole premise of your book is that we don't have to compromise. So talk to us a little about that, if you would.
Well, yes, very quickly, because I was very suspicious. I was very suspicious of that this could work for me, because I'm very individualistic and very much like my own way. And when John said, I'm offering you a no-compromise relationship, I thought, well, that's good, because I'm really bad at compromise. And then I said, but what are we going to do instead? And he said, we're going to create joyful solutions together that are better than what either one of us would have thought up on our own. And I knew immediately that this was a major life-shifting concept. And I embraced it wholeheartedly. And I can tell you, it's market-tested by me, the suspicious one. And he moved across the country a month after we met and moved into my apartment where I had never lived with a lover. And so I had lived alone for 25 years. And I'm here to tell you that through probably thousands of joyful solutions, it was so easy and so fun and so joyful to live with him.
Mm. Well, let's give an example of what you mean by joyful solutions. You share this in the book. You say that you've never been somebody who thought that people should share beds to sleep in, that you like your own space because it's where you're creative and where your writings come to you and your creativity. And there's a lovely picture in there of double or queen size bunk beds. So now I think that most men who are newly married might think, boy, that's a compromise. But you and John came to a joyful solution there. So
John initially was embarrassed. Like, he was showing it to a friend, and he was using FaceTime, and he avoided the bedroom because he didn't want to explain the queen-size bunk beds. But then, within two nights, he was so happy in his bed upstairs, he said, I'm never changing. He said, I can't believe I shared a bed all these years, and I wasn't. He recognized that he had been compromising in some ways, sleeping in the same bed with his wife.
Okay, so how did you get him to turn around? In the beginning, now obviously you just said he's happy after a couple of days, but how did you come to that initial agreement?
The thing about joyful solutions is the basis of it is everybody gets what they want, and so you discover, like, he thought he could only get what he wanted in the same bed with me, but when we discussed it and explored it, he said, oh, we can still visit each other in bed for making love.
There you go.
But then we have our own space for reading and meditating and doing whatever. And so we teach in the process in the book. It's called finding the essence of what you want. It's understanding there is no scarcity. Compromise is based in scarcity. It's like, you know, each person gives up a little and each person walks away feeling just a little bit bad. And joyful solutions are an agreement that everyone is enthusiastic about keeping and where everyone gets their needs met. And it does take a little bit. Sometimes you have to, you know, it takes a day or two to figure it out. There's something called going wide, where you look at all the alternatives that there could be. But it's a fantastic process, and it really works. And it doesn't just work in partnership. I'm using it with neighbors. I'm using it with friends, and I'm using it in my business.
Yeah, and you share a lot of examples of this in the book. So let's take a quick break so I don't have to interrupt you, because I'd like to look at the six habits that you talk about in the book. So let's do that now. The book is called Succulent Wild Love, Six Powerful Habits for Feeling More Love More Often. My guest is Sark. This is co-written with her husband, Dr. John Waddell, who's a psychologist. And you're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. We will be right back.
And can you feel the love tonight? It is where we are. It's enough for this wide-eyed wanderer that we've got this far.
Do you love wildlife? Then make a real difference by helping PAWS care for sick and injured wild animals. Volunteers help feed and clean the animals until they are well enough to return to the wild. Sign up today and help save a wild life. No experience necessary. All training is provided. Visit PAWS.org or call 425-787-2500.
This is Martha Norwalk. Every Sunday morning, beginning at 9 a.m., thanks in part to Whispering Dragon Center in Seattle, we cover the world of animals. This week, March 6th, it's Shelter, Rescue, Sanctuary, and Anything That Helps Our Animal Friends Sunday. We'll have a great lineup. Plus, our featured guest will be Tom Murdoch, director of the Northwest Stream Center in Everett and co-author of the Stream Keeper's Field Guide. He's a wealth of information about our wild animal friends and improving their environment. Martha Norwalk's Animal World, Sunday morning, 9 a.m. to noon, right here on Alternative Talk, AM 1150.
Next week on Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, Seattle native and Edgar Award nominee Glenn Eric Hamilton joins us to talk about his latest novel, Hard Cold Winter. And neuroscientist Dr. Marjorie Wallacott searches for the meaning of human consciousness in infinite awareness, the awakening of a scientific mind. Tune in every Monday at noon Pacific time right here on Alternative Talk 1150 and catch up with podcasts at conversationslive.net.
Thanks for listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair. Follow me on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair.
No shirt, no shoes, no problem. Come as you are. Alternative Talk, 1150 AM.
Can you feel the love tonight? I was led to
rain. And welcome back, everyone. You're listening to Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and I'm very pleased in this segment to be joined by Sark, S-A-R-K. Check out her website at planetsark.com. It talks all about the work that her and her fiancé, I have to correct myself here, her fiancé, Dr. John Waddell, are doing. And the book that we're talking about today, which is Succulent Wild Love. It offers a new philosophy for love and relationships for everyone. And we're going to take a high-level look right now at the six powerful habits for feeling more love more often that they discuss in the book. So let's look at number one, Sark. You say each of us has a wise love mentor inside, and we need to listen to that inner wise self.
Yes. And I just want to say, too, John brought three core teachings from his life into my life, and I brought three core teachings to his, and we married those into the six powerful habits. So that's where they came from.
Perfect marriage there, right?
And so one of mine is three habits. So number one is the inner wise self, and that's, people could think of it as their higher self or pure positive energy or the Holy Spirit. It doesn't really matter what the name is, but it's the unconditionally loving part of yourself. Most people know they have this part, but most people are not consulting with it every day on every subject, including love. And so we teach you in the book how to do that and then how to consistently keep doing that.
Right. And habit number two is using feelings as a guide for knowing when the relationship is off track. So you give an example of in the book of when you and John were first together and he didn't tell you how fabulous you looked one day, and you took umbrage with that. So talk to us about that.
Yes, and then that leads to what is called the inner feelings care system, so that you can learn how to care for your feelings. So most people try to bring their feelings to their partner and say, here, take these. And so we show you how to tend for your own feelings. And in that case, yes, John had not complimented me, and I thought he should. And I was posturing around trying to get him to compliment me. And he's kind of a logical, practical guy, and he was focused on getting ready to leave for a little trip we were taking. So then I remembered the inner feelings care system and my inner wise self, and I said, honey, go down to the car, and I'll be there in a few minutes. And I went to the mirror, and I proceeded to extensively compliment myself in a very heartfelt way, very tender, you know, like, Susan, you look so lovely tonight. I love that sparkly eyeshadow. And I really paid attention to myself and really filled myself up, because that's what we're all here to do. We're here to fill ourselves up and then share the overflow with our partner in the world, not come to our partner half empty expecting them to fill us up.
Right.
I ran down the stairs and came out the door, and he turned from the car and saw me and said, hey, you look great.
Do you think that was because of the essence that you were giving off after you'd given yourself this little self-talk?
Yes, I do, you know, and it was so funny because I didn't need it from him at that point. I mean, it was very nice, but I no longer needed it. And so I think that, you know, inner feelings care system is extremely important. I created it over probably about 15 years ago now, and I use it every day. And I teach people how to use it so they can tend lovingly and skillfully to all the feelings so that they can feel more love more often.
Right. Well, inner critic. We talk about inner critic is one of the habits. Recognizing the inner critic. And we touched on this just a little in the previous question answer here. But give me an example of what your inner critic might say to you and how you deal with him, because I love the fact that you assign them another job. You have fun with it.
Oh, yes. It's important to have fun with everything. Everything I teach has fun installed in it, because none of us really learn. You know, it's much harder to learn if you can't have fun. But inner critics are very serious, and they are, you know, many people don't understand that they have inner critics. They're so merged with inner critics that they think that's just who they are, and they'll say things like, oh, I'm just a perfectionist, that's how I've always been,
mm-hmm.
or I'm just an overachiever, that's me.
Popeye syndrome.
and not realizing that these are actual inner critics, these are actual aspects of themselves which are really not them. And so, you know, many people are run by the voices of inner critics, and you can always recognize them because they say should and never and always. These are all hallmarks of the inner critic.
Right.
And the powerful thing with love is that when you think you're fighting with your partner, you're actually fighting with their inner critic. You're fighting with the inner critic, not them. So this is why people have repetitive arguments that they think, you know, why can't he or she do something different? They're actually having inner critic, you know, I was having an inner critic that was telling me he doesn't think I'm attractive, you know, when I was trying to get him to compliment me.
Mm-hmm.
And so I handled that critic with my inner wise self.
Mm-hmm.
And so this is an opportunity everyone has to transform their relationships. And once you learn how to do this, you can recognize when an inner critic is around, and you can remind them, oh, you're going... I love to send them around the world to any places that need, if there've been disasters, you know, I send them there. I sent a group one time, I sent inner critics to Madagascar searching for rare lemurs, and they actually never came back. But it's awfully fun. And my perfectionist has a job searching, she's in charge actually of all the world's egg production. And she searches all the cartons of eggs to see if there's any broken eggs.
I love it. Well, my inner critic is called Garland, and when he sits on my shoulder from now on, I'm going to go tell him he's got a new job to go find that ring he's been looking for.
Oh, good. Yes, and very important to give them a job that actually fits the type of critic that it is. You know, for instance, you know, if you have an overachiever, you don't want to send it on a spa vacation unless it's in charge of all the activities at the spa.
Right, right. That's interesting. I love that you have fun with this. Let's look at boundaries, because another habit is that we respect our own boundaries and our partner's boundaries. And you use the term spa so that we can remember what we need to contain in when we're thinking boundaries.
Yes, yes. Spa stands for security, privacy, activity, and respect. So you have the right to all of those things, inner and outer activity, whatever you choose to do. So if you choose to watch a lot of television, it's not your partner's place to tell you that you shouldn't be. So John told me early on when he was introducing his three habits to me, he said, I promise to see you as self-lovingly separate with beautiful boundaries. And I loved that because I thought, you know, I don't want to become consumed. I don't want to stop doing the activities that I love. I don't want to have someone monitoring me. I mean, so boundaries, I think, are one of the most important things so that you can feel more love more often. Because if you're not doing and being who you really are, you're going to get really crabby and you're going to want to get away from the person.
Mm-hmm. Well, the last, we talked about joyful solutions, which is another one of the habits. And
yes,
the last one is we practice seeing the perfection in our partner and all the other people they are in relationships and we're in relationships,
yes,
with.
Yes.
So when we're feeling crabby, so you just mentioned feeling crabby, right? How do we still see the perfection in somebody?
Yes. So let's be sure to tell people this is not the egoic form of perfectionism. This is the innate. Everyone is perfect as they already are. It doesn't mean that you don't want them to change or do something different. And it doesn't mean that you don't have preferences, because you do. So it is a matter of communicating, you know, but the basis of the person is perfection. So when you're crabby, of course you're going to forget that they're perfect. And when John first told me that he promised to see me as perfect in any way that he didn't was his responsibility, I was thrilled. Until I realized that he would expect me to see him as perfect. And I had been the consummate list maker and grudge holder in my other relationships. I had carefully kept lists of what I thought they should change so that I could be happier.
Uh-huh. Interesting.
And my younger brother, who I'm very close to, it, whenever I was in relationship with someone, he'd say, so how many list items on this guy? And I'd say, well, there's just four. You know, if only he didn't dot, 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 you know. And I'll tell you, I have no list items on John, which is very unfamiliar. But we show people how it's really unconditional love. You know, it's like, of course, we all have preferences and we look at things and we wish they were different. But it's about adjusting your vision so that you focus primarily on the perfection.
Yeah. And doesn't everybody deserve to be loved for who they are? I mean, you know.
Yes. Yes.
You talk in the book, it segues into my next question. You know, what do you say to somebody who is single and has been single and just can't find love? But, you know, just being, you write in the book about how you were thinking, you know, if I had better clothes, if I were thinner, if I were this, if I were that, you would find love. So we have to find that perfection in ourselves, too.
Oh, yes, yes. And then we write about this. I want to make sure to say this. We really are not advocating that everyone become part of a couple. I know that seems funny in a relationship book, but, you know, it's really a relationship with oneself. We call it being soulfully single.
Mm-hmm.
So some people may choose to remain soulfully single their whole lives. And I want to be a voice and a force that says that is perfectly fine. I get so tired of this, you know, you've got to find someone and you've got to find someone. It's exhausting.
Yes, yes. And what do you say to people when, because I know you were told this a lot, just let go and when you stop looking, you'll find someone.
Yeah, and that's hard for someone who doesn't let go. Yeah, well, I think all of that self-loving work that I did allowed me to open and allow new love in. And John was not my type. And I was not his either, by the way. And I always have heard this, that if you can step out of type, you can often then find a whole new way to love and be loved. The other thing I want to say is that love does not come from a person. Love comes through a person.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So to remember that, because if that person dies or leaves, you think that they're taking your love. And the truth is the love is coming through them to you.
I love it. Well, the book is a lot of fun for listeners. You know, it's a very colorful book. Susan is an artist, or Sark is an artist, and it's just full of her illustrations, and it's full of pictures and just fun stuff with some great advice in here. A very quick, we've got 20 seconds here, final thought you'd like to leave our listeners with, Sark.
Oh, to fill yourself like a full cup of self-love, sharing the overflow with the world. And when you feel half empty, which is multiple times in a day, do the transformative practices in Succulent Wild Love to fill yourself back up from the inside.
Thank you so much. Thanks for being with us.
Thank you.
And the book, again, is called Succulent Wild Love, Six Powerful Habits for Feeling More Love More Often. It's by Sock and her fiancé, Dr. John Waddell. They, as we heard, blended three of her habits and three of his philosophies. And you can find out more at planetsock.com, planetsock.com. And Sock is S-A-R-K. Well, I want to thank you for being with us. We're right at the end of our show today. So if you have questions or feedback on today's show, you can find me in all the usual places, 800-495-7617. You can also find me on info@conversationslive.net. We're on Facebook at Conversations Live with Vicky St. Clair, and we're on Twitter at Vicky St. Clair. Thanks for being with us. We'll see you next week. Until then, live well, live strong.
Hi, this is Vicky St. Clair. If you have a business, service, or event and would like to deliver your message to a large audience, call me at 425-269-4772. Let Conversations Live shine the spotlight on you. Call 425-269-4772.